This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0. I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
These government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are, so welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. That's a21r.com. And, of course, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. It's been a beautiful day in the neighborhood after all, right? Right. And we're going to be having a couple of guests here with us here very shortly. We're working on the problem with the Skype problem. There's always a Skype problem, isn't there? Always. Anyway, I've got a whole bunch of stuff to cover here in a very short period of time, so we're going to go ahead and get at it. And, of course, if you're worried about the coronavirus, it's still here. It's still here. And a lot of people are going, well, you know, is it as bad as we thought it was, or is it worse? And is it going to get worse? That's the big decision that everybody has to, you know, kind of come up with. But, yeah, it's going to get worse. You can guarantee that. But right now, of course, a lot of people, a lot of places are taking the necessary precautions. And I'm trying to get the word out as well that you need to. Don't play around with this. You know, as they say, stay away from large crowds and all that good stuff, but also make sure you're washing your hands. That seems to be the best cure of it all. We, of course, in this country, it's kind of slowed it down, believe it or not. You're seeing, a normal spread of a virus almost similar to influenza. It seems to move a little bit slower than that. And we certainly don't have the number of cases that we would normally see with a big outbreak of influenza. If it was if this virus was breaking out as in other words, if its virulence and its ability to spread itself was as great as what you find with influenza, then we'd be in trouble. But there's some things slowing it down. one, it's not that type of a virus, and number two, it is more of a contact virus. So that's something to think about. In other words, the virus is picked up by touching things, shaking people's hands. Shaking people's hands like politicians, right? That's kind of the key thing, isn't it? Politicians are shaking hands on all the things that on all the big news things, anything that requires a politician to shake the hands of hundreds, thousands. Think about how many hands Donald Trump shakes every day. That's a daunting figure, an absolute daunting figure. And anyway, we're going to be talking a little bit more about that later. You know, we are now seeing some of the panic that's going on in the Bay Area because they're clearing out Stanford University as we speak, sending everybody home. Yeah, they're just sending everybody home. I don't think their quarter, the spring or the winter quarter, doesn't end until the end of this month. And they're just saying, hey, take a powder, get out of here, because you know this virus is spreading quickly. And of course, it's interesting to note that in Santa Clara County, just south of San Francisco and San Mateo counties, there are a zillion reports of people that have been exposed, and of course, there are people showing up with the coronavirus, but none in San Francisco, feces capital of the world. There's none so far. At least that's what they say. This is you just have to really kind of question the data there, don't you? How is it that the feces capital of the world, there's no coronaviruses yet, or at least to be detected, right? None yet. I'm just saying. So this is a kind of a weird comparison. Now in Oakland, you know that mayor over there in Oakland, she's one of the sad faced ones pictured in one of our stories that we put up yesterday about the leadership of the state of California being served notice by the Trump administration in so many different ways. It's kind of interesting what's going on, isn't it? It's very interesting what's going on. California is, said no, by the way, to taxes for school bonds. It's the first time that's happened in years. And all of a sudden, everybody's thinking, oh, shocking, California's turned the corner. There's a tax revolt in California. How about that there's an electoral system that might be somewhat functional? Or how about the people that have been in charge of the voting system of California, which has caused so much Californication around the nation, I might add, as this system has spread, the ballot harvesting and things like that. Maybe that's not working quite like they thought it was going to work, and maybe there's going to be sort of a revival in a turnaround. And maybe some people in California going, we got to let the Republicans win some, as Willie Brown said after the 2018 election, when they wiped out the House of Representatives representation for Republicans in California. And, now all of a sudden people are more and more and more seeing the light about all this. They're starting to realize it is a corrupt system, and hands down, people are just, there's a revolt going on in California. And that revolt is spearheaded by New California. Absolutely. The state of New California. It's here. It's real. It's going to happen. It is happening. The eventuality of becoming the 51st state is, in fact, indeed going to happen. It is happening. So, anyway, I just thought I'd point a few things out to you that maybe there is some silver lining. I'm really out here on this one. Maybe there is some silver lining on the coronavirus, especially for California and other places. Okay, so Biden wins big. He is becoming the big choice, but there is a problem. They've got this party, this Democratic Party, after last night. And again, I'm going to give you the delegates needed to win for the Democratic nomination is 1,991. Biden, after last night's showing, has 823 to Sanders 681. And of course, the Sanders folks, the other half of the party. And think about this. They've alienated the other half of the party. In other words, the Sanders groups, again, getting screwed by the Democratic Party. And that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what is happening. So now here's the problem. Joe Biden, who gets in an argument with a union worker, that's not a good thing. Over Second Amendment, right, by the way, yesterday or day before. These people are looking at him. I'm serious. The Democratic leadership is looking at him like, oh, my God, we've got Bernie on one side and we've got Biden on the other. What kind of a choice does that lead people? And, of course, if the whole Democratic Party machine goes behind Biden, what are we doing to the other half of the voting population? What about that? Well, of course, they've alienated them again. A group already feels alienated, they're going after him again. Will we see Bernie Sanders run as the third party candidate? After all, he's an independent. Calls himself a democratic socialist. Now, the only part about Bernie here on this one, he is a socialist. He's a communist is what he is. He's more comfortable in communist-leaning towns. And he'd like to make the whole U.S. of a town of communists. And that's really the underlining thing about him. You say he's an honest socialist. I've always said that. Well, he needs to come out and be really totally honest with people. He's an honest communist. And the Democratic Party needs to face facts that they're very comfortable with. Socialist and communist in their ranks. And they have been forever. So why not just call yourselves the party of the communists? Stay with us. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Protecting your phone conversations from snooping agencies, foreign governments, and those who would use your conversations to hurt you and your family is the most important action that you can take today. DEF. Defense Enabling Assisting Framework protects all your conversations and text messages. Don't find your conversations on social media sites or in the storage bins with big governments around the world. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system. I've used the DEF system since 2014 and have been 100% protected. Go to A21R.com, that's A21R.com, and sign up for the DEF system today. That's A21R.com, and sign up for the DEF system today. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Agenda 21 Radio is brought to you by Aram Solar. Yes, if you want to make sure your house is powered and you want solar, go to Aram Solar. But also, because of the recent behavior of California, boy, how appropriate it is we're talking about that right now. Shutting off power to 43 counties is not a fun thing. And by the way, it doesn't need to happen. But if it does happen, you need to be prepared. Get yourself a generator for your house. Aram Solar can do just that. It can provide electrical power at any time for any shortage that pops pops on. If it, your power pops off, they will pop on with a generator. All you need to do is give them a call at 866-676-5276. That's 866-676-5276. That's a Romp Solar, the best solar you can get, but also the best generation you can get when your house runs out of energy. Don't let yourself be held hostage by the energy companies any longer. That's 866-676-5276, a Romp Solar.
There are enough laws on the books by Congress that are very clear in terms of how we have to enforce our immigration system.
He's undoing the UN, one community at a time. It's Paul Preston.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. It's 821r.com, and of course, newcaliforniastate.com. Okay, with us on the phone right now, I think we got everything all squared away, is Jody Anderson. Jody was with us yesterday. We had some, communication problems, some static in the lines and all that other good stuff. And Michael Whitaker are both Stanford students. Now, gentlemen, are you there with us?
Michael's here. Jody's not able to make it yet. But...
Oh, okay, well... Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself. Let me kind of couch it. You were a guest speaker at the 6th Constitutional Convention of New California, and I want to say what a fantastic job you guys did, you in particular, and congratulations on your hard work at Stanford University. And I guess you have to vacate the premises, huh? Go home? Is that what they told you there at Stanford?
Yes, they're highly encouraging all undergraduates to get off campus as soon as possible, and they are indicating that they don't want us back until future notice. So they're working to digitize most of the courses. They're going to try and have the lectures be recorded by a camera crew and then broadcast via internet so that nobody ever actually has to go to a physical class. They're going to be holding discussion sections and lecture and you know, office hours with professors over Zoom calls or Skype, or any various technical way that would allow you to perhaps communicate with a professor without actually being face-to-face. So they're really trying to minimize contact, and they're trying to get as many people off campus as possible.
Now, one of the things that I was commenting on the last segment was the fact that the Santa Clara County, which is where you're at, has several cases of coronavirus, yet San Francisco has none.
Yes, I mean, we have 45 confirmed cases. If I may speculate for a moment, I think part of the reason is because they haven't been testing it as much. There are only a certain number of test kits, and they've been mostly saving those for areas that are at high risk, like nursing homes. So it's totally possible that people could be having flu or cold-like symptoms and not realize they have coronavirus, and that might explain the lack of reported cases in San Francisco, because there might actually be cases we don't know about, but they're not serious enough to warrant attention.
And, of course, Los Angeles.
Also, Jody just came into the booth. He made it in. So.
Okay. But, of course, Los Angeles and Sacramento, with the heavy homelessness that they have down there, there's no test kits being utilized on them.
Yes, it's a very serious problem. I mean, this is a relatively new disease, of course, so there's a limited number of testing cases. So the infrastructure to deal with it just isn't there, which is part of the reason why it's caught everybody so flat-footed.
Yeah. So... tell us a little bit about yourself, Michael, and we'll get into Jody here in a second.
Okay.
You're at Stanford, and how did you get there? What are you doing there?
Okay, so I'm a senior in the Department of History. I'm from St. Augustine, Florida, originally. Also, just as a note for radio, I also have a show called Shell Shocked where I operate as DJ Trump, so I have some experience with this medium, and that's partially how we met. So, yeah, I mean, I got into Stanford the usual way. I worked very hard in high school. I got the best grades I could possibly get with my abilities, and I took a lot of, you know, tests and all the standard stuff, just working on extracurriculars, working on getting my GPA as high as possible, working on SAT and ACT prep. I don't know what else to really say about it.
Well, I want to know about your political leanings and what you're doing, because... you're at Stanford, and you're not a Democrat.
Oh, that sort of thing. Well, I've okay. So I've been for as far as politics goes, I've always been a fan of the Constitution for about as long as I can remember. I remember in grade school being very interested in the Revolution and being interested in the Founding Fathers. And I wasn't really politically activated until about 2010 with the Tea Party movement. I was about 11 or 12 at the time, and I was starting to become aware of politics more as an actual, you know, contest of issues and ideologies rather than just sort of this passive show on in the background where the president's kind of the figurehead of the nation. So I've always been more of a Republican, and I've become, you know, more ideologically consistent as I've gotten older. And I don't know. I mean, in high school, I kept it mostly on the down low because I didn't want to rock the boat. I was focused more on my own affairs. But in college, I mean, when I got to Stanford, at first I thought it was going to be much the same, but the political environment here was so far to the left, it was so progressive, and it was so pervasive that I felt that I had to get more involved because, I mean, you couldn't really sit on the sidelines any longer. I mean, there was progressive ideology that was being pushed in the classroom, that was being pushed in the dormitories. I think the moment that really sold it for me was when I drew into a dorm randomly for my sophomore year, and I was informed when we got there that the theme for our dorm, because very often the dorms will have themes that are creative and fun, but instead of having some goofy theme that brought us all together, they were going to be the social justice dorm, which I did not sign up. I mean, and justice is a wonderful thing. Whenever you have to add a modifier to something like justice, you're not really dealing with justice any longer. So when I'm being told that all these leftist talking points are how we're going to organize our dorm community, it's like, it's not possible to stay on the sidelines any longer. So I got involved with the College Republicans, and a lot of other people were thinking along similar lines. We started bringing speakers to campus fairly regularly. We brought people like Ben Shapiro and Dinesh D'Souza, and I also started doing public debates, writing editorials in the Stanford Daily, occasionally the Stanford Review, both publications on campus. And, I mean, that's essentially my political background.
So, in terms of how you were received by your fellow classmates, let's go back to when you were, say, a sophomore, your sophomore year, as opposed to how you're being perceived now by your classmates as a senior.
Okay, so, I mean, it varies from classmate to classmate. I mean, the reality is a lot of people on Stanford's campus, and I think this is probably true of college students generally, aren't that politically engaged. I think many of them are leftists by default because that's just the environment that they live in. I mean, their professors will occasionally spout a leftist talking point. They'll work it into a lecture maybe as a joke or as a quip. And the people around them who are very politically engaged tend to be leftists. And there are a couple hundred hard leftists on campus who are really, you know, dictating the agenda. But at the same time, if you're a conservative or a libertarian or a Republican or a traditional or anything like that, many people who you interact to on a face-to-face basis will be cool with it, but there's a handful of very loud and very annoying exceptions. So whenever you try to do something as a political activist, like whenever you bring speakers to campus, there's very often very loud protests outside. Whenever we try and advertise our events with posters or flyers, the flyers are often defaced or torn down. I've been accosted in the dorms a couple times, not my dorm specifically, but when I'd go dorm to dorm putting up flyers, being informed that they did not, in fact, want our presence there, and you know, how dare we remind them that conservative students exist. So that's always amusing.
I bet it is. So how are the professors? And of course, it looks like you're not going to have any more professors for the rest of your collegiate career here, undergraduate. But how are your professors taking all this? And is there any pointed jabs at you or anything like that?
To be honest, not particularly. It depends on the professor, of course. I mean, sometimes in class it legitimately does not come up because, I mean, as much as I would like to think otherwise, I'm not a household name on campus. Even though I speak up publicly, not everybody knows who I am. So very often, if the class is not directly related to politics and there aren't discussion sections, my professor and I may never interact in a way that would reveal my politics. In cases when we do, there's actually mixed reception because there are a handful of professors who actually do lean Republican or I mean, and they might not be full conservatives or anything like that, but they might have at least some leanings. And if they're not, then even if they're center left, they might feel uncomfortable on campus sometimes because some of their colleagues are way out there. So actually, I've had one or two professors who I've actually been able to form meaningful connections with just because we can talk to each other openly about politics. But I mean, I've heard from other students that there are some professors who are very vitriolic and very not cool with that sort of discussion. And I think that there are one or two professors who have some playful banter. They will occasionally rib on me for being a conservative, and I rib on them for losing elections. So it's all good. It's good fun.
Yeah, that's right. They could lose the election. Winning. It's called winning. Just say winning, yeah. winning.
You know, honestly,
three times.
President Trump has kept most of his campaign promises. The only one I don't think he's kept is I'm not tired of winning yet. Like, we got to keep going.
Yeah, we just, yeah, that one has to, and of course, winning for New California. You and Jody both spoke at the New California 6th Constitutional Convention. You must have just loved the fact that you were at a constitutional convention.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the policy nerd in me was just having a wonderful time. I was watching history. It was amazing. It's like we're talking about all these issues about the proper construction of governance and legitimacy of the Constitution, legitimacy of the state governments, and, you know, government being created by the consent of the governed, and it can be dissolved when it no longer operates to protect the rights of people. I mean, it was a very different political environment than what I'm used to. It was a welcome change.
Well, yeah, I think it's an injection of Americanism and the mixed with winning that everybody, I think, sort of liked. And, of course, then we have some wonderful guest speakers. I'm sure you enjoyed Chris Ann Hall.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she gave two very good constitutional lectures on sort of the history of the Constitution, for those of you who weren't present. Also, some of the legal justification and theory behind the constitutional framework and the proper interpretation of federalism with power flowing from the people to the local governments and states and from the states to the federal level rather than the other way around, where it's often said that the federal government, particularly by leftists, is supposed to be superior. So I think that she made a very good case historically. I thought she was an engaging speaker, and I would encourage all people to check out not just her as a speaker, but her message, because the message transcends the individual. And
yeah,
I mean, it's absolutely true that we are, first and foremost, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and the people are sovereign. But insofar as we delegate sovereignty, we delegate it to the states first, and from the states to the federal government. And I mean, the federal government is much farther removed from the authority of the people than, I mean, obviously themselves and then their states, because individuals will have less of an impact on the federal government just because there are more people jockeying for power. So we have to take that into account, and I think we've been far too eager to give power to bureaucrats and power brokers who are increasingly further away from the actual people who their decisions affect.
So when you saw Governor Mike Huckabee come strutting in, did you obviously participated in the standing ovation as he was received.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was a great time. I mean, he was a good speaker as well. But it was very great to see him. Also, I enjoyed a lot of references to his daughter, who's become a bit of a rising star. He kept bringing her up at every opportunity, like any proud father would.
Yeah, he sure did. And by the way, for those of you that are listening, we have his speech up on Agenda 21 Radio and also NewCaliforniaState.com website. And in the story section, you see the entire 48-minute presentation. I want to turn my attention to your partner there, because yesterday our reception was not really as good as it should have been for him, so I want to give him a second shot here. An additional, not a second shot, but an additional shot. And this is Jody Anderson, and it goes by Joseph, of course. And Jody, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and what you've been up to, because I think you're also sort of a rising star in the conservative circles.
All right, well said. I definitely appreciate the introduction as well. My background's a little bit uncanny, if I may say. So I started my, academic journey at Cornell University. Got my first rise to fame through the debate program with my debate coach, Professor Sam Nelson. So I didn't take the traditional route getting into school. It was kind of my performance in that realm that encouraged the university to take a chance on me. And then enrolled there, did a few years there. And then I started to realize, I'm definitely glossing over a few of the details, but I started to realize that I was somehow beholden to the people who had allegedly given me a chance. It wasn't that I had, earned my way into academia by hard work, staying up late, studying, researching, being committed to ideas, advancing thought, contributing to knowledge. It was somehow I had been giving like a handout that I wasn't aware of. it definitely comes with it comes with a bunch of favors you didn't know that you had to fulfill. And once I figured that out, I then began to engineer my exit immediately out of Cornell, and I figured I'd take my talents to Stanford, one of the more at least in my opinion then, this was a few years ago, mind you, I've matured quite a bit in just 2 years. They make you grow up fast. That would come to Stanford and exercise my intellectual capacity, maximize it in a sense. Upon arriving here, definitely did not see that. Kind of encountered the same situation Whitaker was just describing earlier. A bit more jarring because I look a little different, and I'm supposed to be committed to the ideology of the left. So it was a bit shocking for my counterparts to find out that I somehow wasn't shackled to that way of thinking or that mind frame. But one of the interesting things I will say initially is that I wasn't perceived as someone who was, just evil or misguided. It was just like I was confused and I had been tricked, right? It wasn't that I had formulated my own ideas through observation and research and observing some of the contradictions inherent in some of the ideas that were being spewed in the classroom, and then some of the actions that I seen the professors and politicians who adhere to those ideas, the actions they were taking that were truly contradictory and in some cases, morally opprobrious. So that would be my journey to the conservative side. And not even the conservative side, just the side of truth, the side of honor, honoring one's family, one's tradition. I didn't know there was anything wrong with that until I arrived at Stanford. I truly didn't know that you can't be proud of American history. The fact that this is one of the greatest countries on earth, one of the youngest ones, an incredibly rich intellectual history, incredible adaptability, economic prowess, ingenuity, innovation. I thought those are wonderful things to be proud of. The odds of being born in this century and then to be born American and have all your capacities intact is something quite remarkable, and I was truly proud of that. So I was a bit shocked when I encountered the environment here, especially the pushback against that, because I think Stanford initially stood for those values, and I think it still does. I think it definitely still does. At least the heart of it.
You know, that's kind of that's kind of interesting, because everybody thinks of Stanford as being radically liberal, but you make a good point. Initially, it's it was considered to be a conservative bastion when it was started, with Leland Stanford. And even they know they have the Hoover Institute, and you'd think it's just a bevy of conservatism, which really the reality check is that for the day-to-day life, most people, it's really not. And, we hear all the stories that come out of Stanford from the liberal side of things. And it doesn't paint a pretty picture, but it seems to me, and I'm just throwing this out here, it seems suddenly everybody in California is going to start turning conservative. I think the biggest pressure on that, of course, has been Donald Trump and the economy. But I think that the new California state movement has had a major impact. It's a bigger impact than I think we all realize. I'm starting to realize that myself about how big the impact has become. But both of you, with being involved with the new California state movement, I really am proud of you guys that you speak up. You spoke up at the convention, did a fantastic job. And for you, Jody, you're minoring in Chinese.
This is true, sir. It's very true. I would say my decision to minor in Chinese or even just study it intellectually or culturally is because of the domineering presence they seem to be having globally, whether that's the United States acquiescing to their demands or the U.S. kind of falling into a lull. China has found a way to rise in prominence, so it seemed rather pertinent to pay extra attention to what's going on in China, which included studying the language, the history, and the politics of that nation, since what we're being fed through the traditional media, or at least the popular media, is unreliable.
Oh, that's the understatement of the century, my good friend.
It's a bit unreliable. I think one of the notions here, if I may speak to what goes on campus, is that students are unaware that we're in a perpetual state of war, and that there are nations truly committed to seeing our downfall. And since we are the infant of the world, I think it's extra imperative that we continue to fight and realize the enemies that are abroad and within, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's amazing how people try and stop you from within. We've seen how that plays out in the new California State movement. And Michael, I want to get back to you. You're the current treasurer of the California College Republican and Republicans and an activism director and vice president of the Stanford College Republicans. Okay, now tell me what the activism director and vice president of the Stanford College Republicans does.
All right, so I am the current treasurer. I was formerly the vice president and the activism director. I had to step down in order to give younger students an opportunity to take those positions, and my term was up. But I can tell you that the activism director is largely responsible for making sure that we have a grassroots presence on campus. So very often when we advertise our speaking events, which are incredibly important for offering students an academic perspective that they wouldn't normally get and offering them an opportunity to consume conservative ideas, we also have to get the word out because, I mean, some people will oppose the event directly, but many people will just try and prevent its being known about. So we go from campus to from dorm to dorm. We go from campus center to campus center, and we would put up flyers advertising the event. And this is what most student organizations do, but we have the added burden of the fact that we have to go through the dorms usually a half dozen times to get the message to stick, because very often students or sometimes even RAs will deliberately destroy or deface our posters in order to prevent people from knowing about our events. So that's often a very major part of the job. On top of that, we also do tabling events in the center of campus where we try and talk to students one-on-one, because it's harder for them to smear, you know, somebody as evil if you actually have to look them in the face and hear what they have to say. And on top of that, it's a great way to circumvent protests, because it's hard to organize, you know, a bunch of disorganized and irritated leftists if you're just plopping down a table one day without much announcement saying, hey, we're ready to talk. So those are the two major focuses of the activism director. As for the vice president, I mean, really, it's similar almost to the vice president at the national level, although obviously with a lot less immediate importance, where you just do whatever needs to be done on the board. You act as the right-hand man of the president. You help with paperwork. You help organize the other officers and other members in order to make sure their activities are maximally conducive to spreading conservative thought on campus, and you just handle whatever needs to be handled. It's a pretty flexible job.
You're also, as you mentioned before, you're DJ Trump on the show called the program called Shell Shocked on KZSU. And you got into radio. When did you get into radio?
Oh, well, it's sort of a longer story, actually. A friend of mine who goes by the call sign George on KZSU, who was also a former vice president of Stanford College Republicans, my predecessor, actually, he got a show last summer, and I would call into his show. And as I got to know him, I wanted to get my own show, so over the fall of this year, I started getting training at the radio station. I started taking courses here and started shadowing other DJs. And finally, as of January of this year, I actually started broadcasting independently. So that's been a blast. I've enjoyed every moment of it, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to do it again, because every moment I'm on the air is just an absolute joy.
Yeah, I mean, that's I agree with you. I do this radio show 5 days a week, 3 hours every day. Yesterday I did 7 hours worth of radio, three on my show and four on other shows. So it's kind of, this is what happens when you get into radio and things start to happen for you. I want to talk to you both about the, I see that, Jody, you're an alternate New California Assembly person for Santa Clara County. And I think you were drawn into service a little bit during the Constitutional Convention. Were you also acting in another capacity for another county?
Negative, just solely for Santa Clara County. I think my first introduction into the assembly was during, I believe it was the third Constitutional Convention, whenever we ratified.
Right.
I think we ratified the Constitution when everyone was signing. Truly memorable moment. I remember being one of the younger signees and just seeing tears of joy flowing, and it was incredible. And then having the opportunity to actually participate in the legislative process, hands-on activity, not some abstract classroom assignment, but something that's actually going to effectuate change and contribute to the historical development of America and New California State.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting to think that this is going to impact millions of people. Here in New California, and it really truly is. Now, Michael, was this your first venture at a constitutional convention in Number 6?
Oh, yes. Number 6 was my first convention.
That must have blown you away.
Oh, yeah. It was an absolutely fascinating experience. I didn't actually get to attend any of the legislative proceedings because I wasn't an alternate or a delegate or an assembly person of any level in the Senate or the Assembly, but as somebody who was sort of an outside observer who was just there, from what I did see, there was a flurry of activity, there was a great amount of enthusiasm, and it was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I got to tell you that every day, New California is that, we get closer and closer to statehood, and one of the tells about all this has been the introduction now of Mike Huckabee. Clearly, Mike Huckabee speaks and advises to the President of the United States. And as we knew early on when we put forth the name of Mike Huckabee to come and speak, it was a risk on our part. We didn't know if he would take the bait, so to speak. And, of course, as you know, you probably found out at the convention, we have to have the help of the President to become a state. That's just sort of a given. This is not a plug for Donald Trump in a political sense. It's just a reality. Presidents in the past have always helped new states become new states in the process. And Abraham Lincoln did it with West Virginia. And you had, of course, in the case of California, you had Zachary Taylor and Millard Fillmore, both presidents during the time of California coming in as a state. And then, of course, Eisenhower in the 50s helping Hawaii and Alaska come in as two new states. So Donald Trump, we need all the help we can get, and we're reaching out to him. And it was really nice that when we did reach out, he sent Mike Huckabee. And I think that's probably a stunner to most people to realize that. But it's clear that the president gave the nod for Huckabee to be here, and Huckabee actually said we're going to be a state real soon, didn't he?
Yeah,
very true. You know what I will say, Mr. Preston, real quick. At least pertaining to the legitimacy and growth of New California State, was when the multiple CNN reporters were requesting interviews and conducting them, I had a chance to talk to the main reporter afterwards when the cameras were off, and was just inquiring about what his position was and kind of why he was here, just kind of off the record. He had been sent by CNN to capture this story specifically. So I mean that means it's been on the radar. So not just President Trump and the administration, but the larger media conglomerates and the political structure has been paying attention. So
well, you sit in isolation as we do in New California, as many do, and you say, do they know about us? Is it for real? And, of course, I've known for some time. And from the day that we declared independence in Marysville, California, and, it went viral on Twitter. Worldwide for days. And I said to myself, well, somebody's going to pay attention to this. And sure enough, all the majors started to come around. But then they left us alone, and it's kind of like, oh, my God, we're just doing this for nothing, and all that. But we knew we were on the right track. And as we got into the conventions, and then as we created our government, and then as we started passing resolutions, all of a sudden people started to pay attention a little bit deeper. But I would agree with you. We're at a different level of communication when CNN sends its crew out like that, and they sent it out specifically to cover New California. That's the takeaway on that.
What I can say, what I truly appreciated about the members of New California State and the integrity that they displayed during this constitutional convention specifically was even with the added attention and scrutiny on them at that moment, they definitely rose to the occasion, conducted business as usual, were not distracted at all by the fanfare or the hype of the moment, if I may say, kept it very professional, stuck to the Constitution, passed resolutions, debated, as if the world was not watching, yet knowing that everyone truly was. And that was touching and awe-inspiring in many senses. That's hard to articulate right now.
No, you did it very well. And, you know, that was that would sum up many of the things that, of course, the 2 days that we were there in San Luis Obispo. It was a beautiful setting, and it was a wonderful time. And, you know, like I was telling people, we clearly gave birth, I think, advanced ourselves in the birthing process, so to speak, after the 6th Constitutional Convention. And, of course, now we've got the 7th, a potential 7th Constitutional Convention. Then we go to full convention. This will be sometime in October as we start to break out the actually work on the Constitution for New California. We've already passed I think in Roseville we passed the it's either Roseville, the one in Irvine, where we passed the articles. I can't remember now. See, we're just kind of old hat at this now for 2 years. But, right. You know, we passed the articles of the Constitution. We approved that, and now we have to put in all the pieces of the puzzle. So in October, we'll go to full convention, which will probably last 4 to 5 days, to hammer out our Constitution for New California. And then by that time, the election will be over, and we'll get into this time next year, we'll be engaged with the Congress. So I'm sure you guys wouldn't mind going to help us out in negotiations in Washington, D.C. Now, would you?
Well, I'll see what I can do.
you know, by the way, they canceled all your classes. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, they're going to be having some digital classes. I don't know if it's going to work the same way, but our schedule certainly became much more flexible.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, you got a flexible schedule now. And, of course, maybe in another year they might reopen the classes. Do you guys both plan to do graduate work at Stanford?
I actually plan on continuing, my life. One, with New California State, and just seeing how far the movement can grow and how much influence we can have over the rest of the country, because there are a number of movements that are inspired by New California State, including New York, which I reside in for quite some time and grown up in.
You can see how this movement would work in New York, can't you?
Absolutely. One thing I will say is even living in New York for a number of years, I never encountered personally the movement that would be analogous to New California State. But upon arriving in California, less than 2 months later, I was aware of New California State's presence in Santa Clara County. I mean, that just speaks volumes to the amount of work that's being done. You talk about grassroots and having a groundswell of support. Yeah, it's definitely here. And I would be very negligent to just abandon this opportunity. You only get one chance to write history. So you definitely have to take it.
Well, you guys,
I'll be contributing.
Yeah, you guys have been a big part in that, in seeing that. I think the handoff or the touch of the president by way of Mike Huckabee at our convention, I mean, truly the touch, that where he shows up and he basically says, we're going to be a state and you will be soon. I remember that line that he used, you will be soon. What do you guys think about Mike Huckabee? As we could ask this question, what do you guys think about him being the interim governor?
I'm certainly interested by the idea. I think I'm not sure if he wants to be the governor, because he's already been governor. I feel like he might feel like he's taken his lumps already. But I mean, I think he would be ideologically and constitutionally very well qualified. My only concern would be, generally, I'm skeptical of carpetbaggers. I would like it to be someone from California. But at the same time, if the people of California want Mike Huckabee, and if Mike Huckabee is willing to do it, that would be a very interesting proposition, certainly.
Yeah. Jody, your thoughts?
I would. Mike Huckabee would definitely be an excellent fit, given his initial support of the movement. But once New California State explodes on the national scene, whether that's by the media or by the people, it's definitely going to be by the people, and the media kind of being second to finding out. But there's going to be a lot of individuals, qualified individuals, vying for a chance to help guide and steer. Yeah, so I mean.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that they're already lining up, brother. They're already lining
up. So actually quite looking forward to seeing how things develop and the number of candidates that New California State will be able to choose from.
Well, I can't reveal names, but they call all the time. They call all the time. Many people playing around with the idea, and of course, we'll make the best attempt. There will be elections and so on, but Mike Huckabee's position, as we attempted with Rick Perry, as you know, we made the overture for Rick Perry in the last constitutional convention, and now we've got Mike Huckabee. I don't think he'd be adverse to the idea. In his position as the interim, he would be serving basically not as an elected official, but somebody who would be a real go-between the federal government and New California. That's the position of the interim governor that he would actually fill. So, see, when I look at him as the carpetbagger one, and that's a look, by the way, that's a real true look and a real true statement. The next step would be for him to step aside and there would be an election and people would be elected. That would probably take place about 18 months after Congress ultimately professes to give a statehood. So that's, you know, we have that time frame. So he would be a person who has had governorship experience, knows the ins and outs, because we're going to have somebody who can step in and really pull in the reins of governance, knows how to do that, and knows how to recover a state. Now, he recovered a state, Arkansas, after the Clintons. Perry recovered a state, and, of course, the economic boom that's going on right now in Texas is attributable to Rick Perry. And, of course, he knows all about mining and all this other stuff, and drilling and all that stuff, which is one of the things that New California will be into. So as we look at an interim governor, we're looking at different a different set of tasks that would be associated with him, and there would be no carpet bagging. No carpet bagging for us.
Okay, point duly taken.
But anyway, that's I'm just throwing out all these. We're going to need somebody with experience, and it's not going to be Jerry Brown. I'm going to tell you that. God, no. Or Gavin Newsom. Their days are numbered, unfortunately, for them. But fortunately for us. Listen, gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio. You got the message out really loud and clear. The messages I'm getting from everybody right now are very, very healthy and strong, saying great job. These two are so knowledgeable and well-spoken, a pleasure to listen to, is what I'm getting. That's just one of the things. Somebody here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Paul.
Well, you know, and we're going to probably be talking more and more and more, because now we have to go out and convince people. This is our big time in which we convince people in the next couple of months, next 3 or 4 months, about New California. So, anyway, thanks for being with us, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, man.
Awesome.
Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that was Michael Whitaker and Jody Anderson, both from Stanford University, and of course they're right there in the middle of the maelstrom there at Stanford, because they have this issue now where they're closing down the campus and sending everybody home. So because of the virus. So they, I think, are going to be sticking around. So we'll probably hear more from them. I thought, what a pleasure! These are the guys. This is the youth movement. We have Jim and Jake. We're going to try and get in touch with them. They also spoke at the convention. Maybe tomorrow we'll have them on. And they'll tell you their story. They're out of Marin County. Anyway, I want to say thank you for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. And remember to visit our website, a21r.com. And our sponsors, Aram Solar, 866-676-5276. For all of your solar needs and energy needs, like cogeneration, generators, and so on, this is the time to get a hold of people if you want to create an energy system for your house that's a standalone system. You don't have to rely upon PG&E and Southern California Edison and all that stuff. You can, if power goes out, you got power right there at your property. You don't have to worry about and depend upon people that are beholden to the state government or even being run by the state government, which is the proposal right now. Probably won't be the case with New California. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Visit our website, a21r.com, and, of course, newcaliforniastate.com, ncs51.com. And stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
SOS. To the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.